I'm Peter Mudlin, and you are listening to Teacher's Lounge. And if this is your first time hearing our show, I've got great news for you. It's based on a really simple idea. That we've all had teachers in our lives who helped us become who we are today. And every educator we have on this podcast, whether teacher, coach, or professor, is nominated by the folks who listen. We want you to be a part of the show with us. Tell us about the educators who've inspired you and the folks in your community who deserve a spotlight. You can email us with your nominations and your story ideas at teacherslounge@niu.edu. And today on the show, it is my conversation with Chris Marofsa. Chris is a counselor at Hiawatha High School. We had a great conversation about the unique role school counselors have. He's helping students consider their future, what career they want to pursue, or what classes they should take, and also providing meaningful mental health support. But for it to be really effective, students have to be motivated to seek out that support.
I struggle with feeling like I'm waiting to field things or waiting to get ahead and teach people. People want an easy life and an easy experience. And so there's not a lot of people that are super willing to open their can of worms, as I say, or peel their onion. It takes some time. And so more often than not, it feels like I'm creating a space where I'm ready for that to happen when they are.
We talk about our love of nature and how being in nature can be so healing and de-stressing. We also talk about Chris's path into counseling, which from the outside might seem like a roundabout path, but for him, makes total sense. We've got that and so much more here on Teacher's Lounge. Now, before my conversation with Chris, I've got another education story we want to share. Texas is experiencing its largest measles outbreak in 30 years. And I got to speak with a religious studies professor about the growth of religious exemptions to vaccines here in Illinois. Last year, more than 25,000 Illinois students from both public and private schools received a religious exemption for the measles vaccine. That's up about 90% from a decade before, according to data from the Illinois State Board of Education. Other states, like Texas, allow for exemptions based on a, quote, reason of conscience, like a religious belief. Those exemptions led to lower vaccination rates in Gaines County, where the measles outbreak began and spread among the county's Mennonite Christian community. In Illinois, religious exemptions are the only non-medical exemption families can seek. And back in 2015, Illinois made it more difficult to receive religious exemptions. The state passed a law that made parents and guardians submit an exemption form that both details the, quote, specific religious beliefs that conflict with immunization and requires them to get the form signed by the child's health care provider. It's then up to the school to decide if the objection is valid or not. It's probably not a surprise that the Illinois schools with the most religious exemptions are religious schools, and many of those schools have seen significant increases in the percentage of students who received exemptions. A private Christian school in suburban Cook County had the most objections last year. In the past 5 years, they've gone from 11% to 30% of their students receiving them, and others have gone from 10% to 25% or 1% to 10% in that same time span. And it's important to note that, as those numbers indicate, it's still a minority of families at these schools who are seeking these waivers, but why exactly are they seeking them so much more now as opposed to 5 or 10 years ago? Max Perry Mueller is an associate professor of religious studies and history at the University of Nebraska, and he says, just think about what's happened in the last 5 years.
I do think COVID is the obvious and clear catalyst to the increase in these exemptions.
But COVID doesn't explain everything. For one, Mueller says it doesn't explain why the politicization of the COVID vaccine would spill over into denial of other vaccines like MMR for measles.
COVID was the catalyst that drove up exemptions, but it was a movement within these communities, especially on the religious right, the evangelical religious right, of skepticism, if not hostility to institutions and their expertise, especially bureaucratic expertise.
Mueller says that distrust of government institutions and, by extension, public schools had been building since Reagan and the so-called moral majority. Then COVID became a perfect catalyst to weave mistrust of vaccines more clearly into the worldview that the government exerts too much control over their lives and the lives of their children. But the religious exemption form families submit does ask people to detail specific religious beliefs that conflict with immunization. Is there a particular set of Bible verses commonly cited by those seeking an exemption? Well, a 2021 post from the Christian think tank The Family Research Council outlines how families can justify religious exemptions by citing a verse from the book of Romans that says, quote, "For whatever does not proceed from faith is sin." So Christians shouldn't willfully act against their conscience. Mueller says this is an example of what theologians call proof texting.
The Bible is such a complex text that you can make it say anything you want, and people have for millennia.
But Mueller says that's not to say these anti-vaccine beliefs are insincere.
These folks are coming from a genuine place of care for their children. They think that they're doing what's best for their children.
And again, this is still a minority view. Most people do see the value of vaccines. But Mueller doesn't think anti-vaccine sentiment is a short-term COVID-era phenomenon either. He thinks this is a generational shift that was a long time coming. And Mueller thinks there's only one thing that could change that.
And what will change it, and I do believe eventually it will change, is unfortunately mass outbreaks and mass suffering.
When measles vaccination rates dip below 95% in a community, that's when the risk of an outbreak begins to climb. In Gaines County, Texas, where the current outbreak started, the measles vaccination rate was 82%. In Illinois, there are only two counties, both at the southern tip of the state, with rates below 90%. All right, without any further ado, it's time for my conversation with Hiawatha High School counselor Chris Marafsa. We start off talking about the last time we saw each other, which happened to be at a training session teaching teachers about the importance of their local watersheds, and the session took place literally in the middle of the Rock River.
Chris, the last time that I saw you, we were like on the Rock River
in
kayaks, literally on the Rock River kayak. And, you know, you're a professional school counselor. And
yeah.
So I'm curious, since then, were you able to bring in any of the watershed education stuff into your work at all? What did that look like for you?
No.
No. I know. I figured that would be interesting to figure out how that would fit in
officially,
if you were able to do it.
Officially as an educator in my professional job, not really. On a personal level, it's been immensely, like, sounds a little dramatic, but life-changing. I think I took that training because I'm working towards a budding interest in nature. But
that was a great pun if you were intending it or not.
Yeah, I guess so. I'll take credit for it. And thus, because I bring a lot of who I am to my job, it has influenced the people around me. It has influenced the relationships I have with my colleagues, but has it turned into a school project yet? No.
But maybe one day.
I've talked with multiple people about it. It's really sort of underlined a relationship that I have with a colleague who has a forestry degree.
Yeah.
And actually this Thursday, we're going to go together on our first nature walk just as friends.
Heck yeah.
To like be together in nature and talk about trees. And he's really into trees, so we're going to go, like, teach me how to identify some more things.
Okay,
and
yeah.
I've talked with him more than once about the training and about how influential the ideas were. And he and I have said things like, you know, in schools, things take time, too. So we've agreed like, at some point, we'd really like to, at minimum, bring some native plants to our campus so that we can start bringing these things to our community. That's the gist of it.
And I'm sure there'd be some students that would be super into that.
Yeah, I really hope so. You know, I took that training also because of, like, you know, the interest in nature. But I, outside of being a school counselor, I have some experience with an agency in town. I'm not currently working with them. I stepped away a little bit ago. But I used to be a clinician at AdventureWorks.
Oh, and, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, an awesome organization here in DeKalb County. Very unique. I'd really like to be involved in the future again, but for whatever reason, it's felt very natural for nature and counseling and caring for people to go hand in hand. And so it really, working there and learning the techniques of bringing mental health to people with nature as the container, you might say.
Yeah, conduit for it even. Yeah.
Yeah. It sort of led me to want to do that training, and thus a lot of the things that I talk with people about are the metaphors that I might use. I think that to take it back to that watershed training, I think that that's all inspired me in a lot of ways, but I feel guilty to say, no, we don't have a garden at school yet.
No, it takes
time.
I'd like
to.
Like you said, it makes sense, the connections, like when I think about it though, where like, and I think that, and it's not just me, I think a lot of people feel the same way, that being in nature, especially with other people, but just being in nature is some of the time where I feel the most at peace. So it makes sense to connect those things for sure.
Yeah, I think a lot of young people are striving for it.
Yeah.
Working with young people in nature, I have firsthand experience of watching students in our community, for lack of a better term, kind of lose it in nature or become very overstimulated.
Really?
Yeah. Even, you know, we took a person out to a forest preserve here in our county, and one of the genuine questions they had for us are there bears or moose out here? And on one hand, your first reaction might be like, no. On the other hand, it's eye-opening to show that there's maybe some ignorance sometimes to what is literally in our backyards. And not to, you know, throw any judgment or anything. I just don't think that person had very many experiences learning out there.
We only know what we know, right?
Yes. It's an anecdote, I think, to the whiz of phones and media and instant gratification. It's really important, I think, for people to, not even through conversation and words, but to just to understand the time scale of nature, at very least. I think it's a good anecdote for young people and their stress and their anxiety.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's very personal, and I'd love to incorporate it. But kind of what we're talking about, our society moves fast. I don't know that everyone has the same goals that I do all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that because we kind of get, our whole region gets grouped into this like flat farmland, nothing going on, that people really overlook that how just beautiful our area is and how many beautiful forest preserves, prairies, rivers that we have. And it's something that I wish more people took advantage of, but I also, you know, you need to be introduced to those things in a lot of ways, right? I was lucky that, like, you know, I got to do those things with my dad and my siblings and stuff. Yes. Some people don't have that, you know?
I grew up in Cook County, beautiful forest preserves. Bussey Woods is probably the biggest one. Beautiful place, but you can hear a major highway at any point in that park.
It gets me so, I think about this all the time, and I live out, like, right in, like, the border between Aurora and Naperville right there.
Okay, yeah.
And there's some absolutely beautiful foresters there.
Right.
But we always note that no matter how deep you feel into the woods, if you stop and listen, you can always hear cars.
Yeah, and, you know, we probably have some like that too, but DeKalb County has plenty where you're not hearing anything other than nature. I think that's pretty neat.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, it's a little better, more spread out here. Another metaphor I talk about is we spend a lot of time in buildings. Simply just going outside and losing the roof over your head can create this feeling of expanse. Or if we're really stressed, I'll often tell, or you know, tell students, it feels like I'm on a mic, but right here, as if right up against your nose. And when you walk outside, we can maybe literally feel that container being kind of ripped away and that expanse happening. Another reason why out here, I appreciate the big sky and the open space. Growing up in the suburbs, now I don't think I would like to live in that area. I think it's a little hustle and bustly for me and my stress level.
Yeah.
That's something I've noticed and try and pass on.
Yeah. Yeah, I always feel that when I go back home because I grew up in Sandwich where it was a little bit more open.
The opposite.
More expensive. Yeah.
I have some cousins that grew up in El Paso.
Yeah.
And both of them live in major cities and seem to be happy with it.
Yeah.
And
but I always have that feeling when I go home, and it feels especially poignant at night, like if I'm leaving, just how quiet it is also. It's something that you just don't think about until you hear it, you know?
I appreciate it.
Yeah.
For me,
sure. No, I do
for
too.
Me, it's Absolutely. Necessary.
So you're on spring break right now, though. So are you making some time to unplug, get out in nature a bit?
I am. We've had a couple rainy days, but
that's true.
Again, part of that training that we keep referencing, it really has stuck with me and was in line with me putting native plants where I live. And so this is the first spring that I'm watching native plant seeds sprout. So again, on a personal level, it's cool.
Yeah.
I'm out there every day, sort of just looking at the cotyledons coming up from the seeds and when it snowed, I got a little nervous, but everything looks fine.
Yeah.
They're still there. So, yeah, I'm trying, like, at very least, I'm trying to incorporate that in my personal life. I referenced I'm going to go on a tree walk with a colleague on Thursday. I have a one-year-old daughter. So,
congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah. It's affected my time to engage in my hobbies.
Yeah, that'll
do
it.
She's obviously very able to be involved outside, but if it's a little extra windy or chilly, or maybe it's not as convenient to go as far, something like that. But
I bet there's some adorable little hats, though, you know.
And boots.
Oh, yes.
Baby boots. Wow. She has a pair of Ariat cowboy boots. They're unbelievable.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we referenced a couple of times that you are a school counselor at Hiawatha, the high school, correct?
Correct. Hiawatha High School.
I'm interested, you know, like I talk to a lot of, you know, more traditional classroom teachers and I'll say things like, you know, it's about spring break. How's the school year going for you? Mm-hmm. And, you know, they can sometimes measure that based on like, you know, if you're an elementary school teacher, you have the same group of kids all year.
Right.
If you're a, you know, high school teacher, you have, you know, different kids, but you know, you have different classes, but with the same kids in the classes.
Right.
I was going to ask you like, oh, how's the school year going for you? But I don't even really know how you measure that sort of thing year to year, but how is the school year going for you?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. School counselors are unique. Their roles look pretty different in a lot of different places. A lot of that's depending on probably size of where you work. Mm-hmm. That seems like the one of the biggest factors that kind of changes experiences, what your caseload or your student, you know, the student body that you're working with. What size is that?
Right.
In my situation, I'm the only counselor for 9th through 12th grade. We have it's a rural school, so it's a smaller setting. Because of that, I think I wear a lot of hats. And one of the perks of that is that my school year is very seasonal. And so there's always something going on, but it's different sort of every 2 months.
Oh, interesting.
This season of my life has a lot to do with getting seniors ready to transfer off into their world, whatever that might look like, and helping support them in any way that I can.
Yeah.
That takes up a good amount of time right now.
Right.
It's the season of scholarships and applications and hearing about those things, making decisions about those things. For some of the younger students, this time of year represents getting ready again for the next year. But maybe if you're still in high school, it looks like choosing your classes and determining what's best for them, for their journey, for their interests. And then I have to kind of piece that together. Being at a small school, it's not really something that we can farm out. So I'm kind of, you know, up to my elbows in building the schedule for our school. That's maybe not ideal, but not abnormal for counselors in certain areas to do.
No.
So it's very seasonal. Sometimes it's a lot about working with students. Sometimes it feels a little more administrative or, you know, state testing is something that I oversee.
Logistical.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So right now, this is a time of year where we kind of like pause in the middle to really think about what's coming next, whether it be for seniors or for our younger students and what next year is going to look like. That's kind of where we're at. And then some testing. Another unique thing, we are doing our first career fair since I've been at the school. I've been told they've had a couple years ago. People come in and talk with students about different careers, but we're going to have approximately 30 table presenters for our high schoolers on April 18th. And an opportunity for them to interact with anybody from a veterinarian to a police officer to we'll have a tattoo artist.
Sweet, yeah.
So that is a labor of love, but that's logistically pretty heavy right now too.
Yeah, I'm sure that it takes a lot of moving around trying to schedule things. Yeah, that's a lot of job.
A lot of cold calling, and I can't tell the future, so I really hope it goes well.
Yeah.
But it's the first time we're doing it, so I'm sure there will be learning along the way. But I'm really thrilled that almost entirely through email communication and maybe effective writing that we had so many people willing to come on their day and share their time with us and do that with our students. So I'm looking forward to that. But that's a lot of work right now.
You know, this episode probably won't go up for a couple weeks, so we'll just assume that everything went really well. Yes. So congratulations on that. I'm so glad it turned out.
Yes.
You know, like we talked about, like you wear a lot of different hats as a school counselor.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to look different depending on the school you're at. But kind of inherently to that role, you work in, you know, the two different kind of arenas that we talked about, like the school mental health and then also just the kind of, building the school schedule, helping people, yes. you know, like you mentioned, you know, seniors as they're transitioning to the next point in their life, or freshmen mm-hmm. trying to pick out their classes, that as a school counselor, you do get kind of a unique holistic view mm-hmm. of what that journey looks like throughout high school.
Some of the quotes that I find myself saying are, you know, I'm not an administrator, right? and I'll talk to colleagues and say things like, you know, there's moments where I am with a student, and I'll say something like, I'm really in their intimate life, whether that be something they're with socially or just personally, maybe with a teacher, organizational skills. And then within minutes, I might be in the office with my principal, sometimes maybe the superintendent of the district, talking about higher level things. And so I do think most school counselors share this, especially ones in small districts, where I go from maybe more high level things to very intimate student level things. And so it's a very wide spectrum of experiences. And yeah, you kind of maybe need the skill set to do both. I see myself a lot of times as like a liaison.
Yeah,
or
yeah, that makes sense.
Kind of a conduit or a connector. Sometimes I feel like a lot of my job is finding out the right thing to say to the right person at the right time. It's a lot of creative communication, helping people process things, put language to things. Yes.
It is fascinating.
It's a lot.
It's, again, like you said, like you might be talking with the superintendent about organizing your career fair, and then these, you know, intimate things about social life and, you know, life of your students. It is a
Correct.
Very specific kind of communication skills that you have to have yeah. for that role. But
job, talking about where do I find my first job? And then talking about, yeah, like you said, interacting with the mayor of the town that I work in to try and work with the Chamber of Commerce to
right.
have our career fair be known to them.
Yeah.
And sometimes a little imposter syndrome creeps in. You know, I'm not in the position of being a principal or superintendent, but sometimes it feels that I work so closely with them and I'm respected by them and they appreciate my opinion, which is really great. But
yeah.
then I'm like, yeah, but I'm not really in that club. I'm kind of in my own area.
Yeah.
That might extend sometimes. Maybe I'll feel a little left out or a little guilty if I have a different experience than the teachers that I work with. We're close. We're colleagues. But I have a different daily life than they do.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Again, pros and cons. I love being in the driver's seat of my experience. But I also... it's totally unique, and sometimes that can be a little isolating or lonely if you don't have a colleague to bounce an idea off, or can you work on this project while I focus on this? Sometimes that can get a little tricky, but
right,
I still don't think I'd trade it for most things right now.
You're the only one doing that job at your school, so like literally you're the only one that knows the, you know, exact
To clarify, I'm
like
the
that.
Only one at the high school level.
Yeah, at the high school
I do
level.
Have two colleagues mm-hmm. that work in the district.
Yeah.
We're kind of unique. We are three schools underneath one building, but we're split up into different parts. So
okay, yeah.
I can go work with my colleague who's the elementary and middle school counselor, and we do almost daily, but we have different caseloads
yeah,
and we technically work in different buildings, even
yeah.
though I can access them throughout my day.
Right. How many years have you been a school counselor?
This is my fourth school year, and it's my, I guess you'd say, fifth year with the licensure that I have to be a school counselor or a mental health counselor. It's my fifth year doing that.
Yeah.
I was a little bit of a late bloomer to this career, you might say. But yeah, this is my fourth year.
Yeah. So were you doing non-school-based mental health work prior to school-based? Or was, you know, what did that look like for you? I'm curious about how you came to, you know, this career, because I know that this is something that, you know, you have a bachelor's in music, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some people I think it's kind of a random pathway. For me, who's lived it and had to explain it in different job interviews and things, it makes a lot of sense to me why someone who feels that they're connected to the world of art, specifically performing arts, over time finds their skill set really useful in being a counselor or mental health professional. Throughout the years, I've also met a lot of people that share that story. I think some of the carryover skills are meaning-making and nonverbal communication and understanding empathy, sort of on a nonverbal level. But I decided when I was an undergrad studying music that I felt things pretty deeply, and thus my anxiety around the gigging lifestyle, which a lot of musicians live, felt it was going to be pretty stressful for me and kind of clash with what I was needing. And at that time, I was teaching a lot of music privately, which is what a lot of musicians do.
Yeah.
And I was working with a lot of students and families, and I felt much more fulfilled sometimes checking in with the parents and families before and after lessons than teaching the actual music, I started to realize. So that sort of ethic compared with my personal experiences going through high school and college, utilizing the services of counselors to just cope with my own anxiety and stress.
Yeah.
It really made it seem like this is sort of what I want to use these skills with. And so I decided to get my master's in school counseling in 2017. And so 5 years since my graduation, that is the culmination of all of my mental health experience. And it's all been school-based on some level.
Yeah.
Part-time, I've taken on clinical roles outside of those jobs to retain supervision or explore different modalities, like I mentioned, adventure therapy.
Right.
But yeah, I sort of taught music and worked some random retail jobs while I was in college.
Mm-hmm.
I speak a lot about, as a school counselor, help a lot of people understand that post-secondary education can look very different for a lot of people. There are still certain jobs you simply have to have a master's degree to do. Counseling is one of them.
Yeah.
We're just in a place where that's the system. That's how you are vetted by the state. That's how you get through the proper prerequisites and demonstrate your ability on different tests. That's where we're at. Other jobs, you can go get a 2-year certificate, make a lot more money than I do.
Yeah.
It's kind of to do what I felt I wanted to do. I had to go through that journey again. Luckily, I really like school.
Yeah.
I had no issues studying. I knew I wanted a master's. I just wasn't sure in what. So that kind of came to me through teaching music and learning that being a musician is just a little too unstable for my personality right now.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, it's something that I think about all the time with, at the time, identifying those connections between the skills and communication and feeling of being a musician to, you know, being a teacher or being a counselor.
Mm-hmm.
If that's something that we connect those dots at the time, or if it's something that, you know, later on, once you made that transition, you're like, mm-hmm. oh, that all makes a ton of sense in retrospect. Because I
right.
think of that from my own experience.
And it's easy in retrospect.
Right.
It is
exactly.
more difficult when you're trying to figure it out and define yourself.
Yeah.
I remind high schoolers that, you know, I'm a human. I've been there. I just have 15 to 20 more years of figuring it out or experience.
Yeah.
But yeah, in retrospect, it is easy. I'll plug a little bit of like what I've learned. There's a pretty famous career counselor, kind of a grandfather that you learn about in counseling school named John Holland. And he talks about the RIA-SEC code. He thinks through different testing that you can, come up with this snapshot of a person. And based on their answers to different types of questions, it gives you a three-word code that sort of describes your tendencies and interests. And those are things like realistic, investigative, artistic, social, enterprising, and conventional, I believe is RIA-SEC. We should fact check that.
Nobody wants to be conventional, but
yes, yes. But someone like me often comes up with like the ASE or artistic, social, and enterprising. It usually those things aren't that far off from each other. So it's usually not that surprising when people kind of connect the dots, but at face value, it doesn't seem that way.
Yeah.
I'm a little biased. I think people who learn an instrument and learn it at a high level are capable of doing anything. We're kind of losing some of that, unfortunately, in our society. I think patience is becoming harder to find, and grit and resilience and sticking with stuff and like learning how to practice.
Just
hard stuff.
Taking time being bad at something for a while.
Yeah, I hate
really
to sound
difficult.
Old because I don't feel that old, but it feels that way a little bit.
Yeah.
So I'm a little biased, but people who play music or have studied it, in my opinion, or have gone through the effort of learning how to read it, maybe more quote-unquote classically trained, I've never met those people and thought anything other than being impressed and sort of blown away at their capacity.
Yeah.
And so I'm a little biased, but I'm never surprised when I see those. I love to find, like, again, being a school counselor, once in a while I'll be on a college website and one of the deans at a college has a music performance degree or something like that.
My editor here all the time. In journalism.
There you go.
Yeah. Shout out guy. He's listening to this probably, you know, a couple of weeks from now.
Nice. Yeah. Very nice. I think it's really cool. And anyone out there should be like, I want to be a part of that crew.
Yeah.
Yeah. Learn something. It'll only benefit you. I get a lot of questions when I talk about my background. Are you still playing? Are you still a musician? And
thanks for asking those before.
not right now. Not really. It is permanently enhanced the way that I see the world and listen, and the knowledge that I have about music when I'm in exposed to it. But I'm not actively gigging. I'm not really actively practicing.
Yeah.
I strum a guitar at home and things like that. But maybe someday.
Yeah.
I wouldn't mind being in a band. I just haven't gotten back to it quite yet. Taking a few years to explore this other stuff.
Yeah. I was like, I hate to add another thing to your already busy schedule and your plate of things to do at school. I was like, oh, you should get involved with the music stuff at your school too. I was like, you've got enough to do right now.
I know. Yeah. I have to draw lines. I'm interested in the band. I would love to support it more so. But not right now. Different goals for right now.
Different goals for right now.
Yeah.
You were talking earlier about how, part of your trajectory too is informed by, utilizing some of those services when you were in school too. And
very much so.
I think about my own experience and again, the kind of stigmatization that we see about mental health at the school level and about how, especially at a small school, everyone knows each other. I went to a school like that too around here, about like how, even if we have fantastic services available, trying to make sure that people are aware of them and feel comfortable and like feel okay utilizing them. How do we kind of try to do that from your perspective, making sure that people are aware and comfortable using the services?
I like to think in metaphors. I haven't thought of this image, but it's making me think of baseball. Sometimes as a school counselor in a small town with high schoolers, I feel like a center fielder. I'm waiting for that pop-up to come out and I just need to get under it and like catch that thing and know what to do next. And then there's other times where I feel that I should be more like a pitcher, where I am more controlling the game and not forcing, but more proactive in the way that I advocate for mental health or things like that.
Yeah.
You invited me on this a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
I'm nervous talking about these things in this day and age.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of opinions right now about mental health in schools. I don't want to be in a position to speak to that entire topic only from my observation and perspective. What I really find is the stigma comes from a place of fear and ignorance. And ignorance can be solved. Ignorance does not mean stupidity. It means I haven't been exposed to something. And so, and I think about experiences where maybe a parent or a family or a community member felt that I overstepped in someone's life or felt that I was intruding. I'm really proud to say that while there might be some loud or intense emotions at the beginning of experiences like that, I can't think of an example of one that ended the same way, where after some venting or some mutual understanding or me maybe using my active listening skills, usually we're in a place where we find that we have a common goal, which is trying to figure out how to do life with a little bit less intensity or stress or like counterproductive things happening.
Yeah.
Maybe lots of different ways to come at that or lots of beliefs on how we achieve that or how quickly that's possible to achieve. But for me, the stigma really comes from a place of fear. And so the way to kind of get around that on my level is to keep practicing an immense amount of patience, and that's kind of hard to do sometimes.
Yeah.
And I struggle with feeling like I'm waiting to field things or waiting to get ahead and teach people. People want an easy life and an easy experience, and so there's not a lot of people that are super willing to open their can of worms, as I say, or peel their onion. It takes some time, and so more often than not, it feels like I'm creating a space where I'm ready for that to happen when they are. It's not my place to overstep or force it into a community or pretend that I have all the answers. So
you're in center field waiting for it to come, got the glove on, ready to go. So as soon as it's ready,
it feels that way. And when you look at counseling philosophy, it only works best when the person's motivated. I'm not forcing anything into anyone that doesn't want it.
Yeah.
We're not evangelizing.
Right.
That's not what counseling's about. That's not what school counseling's about. I feel that there are aspects of our society right now that imagine that that's what it's like. In my perspective, it's not the case. I'm a new father. The people I work around, the vast majority of them, if they don't have children, they have very strong family values. We want a nice, safe, comfortable place for everybody. And I think we have to kind of create the space for that to happen. We can't deny that for others, but if we want it for ourselves too.
Yeah.
It's a bit of a tangent.
No, I know. I don't think it's a tangent.
Okay.
But I think fascinating. You started your career as a school counselor, like right during the pandemic too.
Literally. Like, my internship, I was in internship, and I remember being in the main office of the school that I did my internship at. And the teachers in the office said, hey, after this next period, they are going to announce that, like, we're staying home after spring break. Keep your laptops with you and stuff like that. And they're like, don't tell any students yet. And then, like,
that's a moment I'll stick with you.
Yes. And I, you know, I was texting at that time my girlfriend, now my wife. And yeah, it's pretty wild to look back on that topic. So many people have said, wow, what a time to start. Like, you name it, the comments. And all I can really say is, like, ignorance is bliss. I don't have anything to compare it to.
Right.
And so it's all just been, I don't know. I guess you could say it's gotten better each year then, if it was really that crazy for people who have been on both sides.
Yeah.
It's challenging either way. I mean, education's pretty tough. I don't want to be like a martyr or something, but, like, it's hard.
Yeah.
It's very hard.
Right. Well, it's always a big conversation about, like, you know, how many students struggle with mental health issues and about this specific moment that we're in. And sometimes when you lay it down about, like, the last 5 or 10 years with a, you know, once in a century global pandemic and all sorts of, you know, technological changes and social media and everything else going, I'm like, yeah, you don't say. People are a little stressed out, right? Or, you know, anxious.
Got the vibe that people were appreciative to come back to school.
Yeah.
Legitimately. Yeah. With masks and no schooling. And then masks in schooling. I had a lot of families and kids saying to me, like, I never would have thought this, but, like, I guess there is value here. Maybe it is good to be around our peers, and maybe it's not ideal to be at home in my room all the time.
Yeah.
Young people included. We are social beings.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of adults that are sick of hearing about COVID as an excuse, too, in education. But it's not. It's not an excuse. It's part of the fabric of who we are now.
Yeah. Legitimately one of the craziest things that's happened in any of our lifetimes, right?
I don't understand why we have to downplay it.
Yeah,
it was what it was. It didn't completely decimate our society, but it left permanent marks. And I don't know why, for some reason, it feels like we should just be able to snap our fingers and go back to normal. Like, that. There isn't a normal. It's a tapestry, and it's in there now.
Yeah.
And we're just coping with it. That's how mental health works.
Yeah.
You can't go back. You just have to wrap your mind around it for the future, I suppose.
Yeah. I want to ask, this show is kind of built on the idea that everyone's had an educator, hopefully, in their lives that has made a big impact on them, helped them kind of discover who they are a little bit. And I'm curious for you whether that's a more traditional classroom teacher, whether that's a counselor, whether that's a, you know, music instructor. Are there any people who come to mind for you at any point in your education experience?
Yeah, definitely more than I probably have the capacity to talk about here.
Yeah.
If you ask,
like, you're doing an Academy Award acceptance speech. Yeah, you're like, I want to thank these people. Yeah.
And I don't know if it's, like, proper to, like, name people.
Yeah.
I haven't cleared anything with anybody.
That's totally fine. Yeah.
In preparation for this, I knew that was sort of one of the areas, and I thought a lot about that. If you ask my parents, I think that they will say one of the school counselors I had in elementary school was immensely influential in my young experience. I don't have super conscious memories of being with that person, but my family does.
Hmm.
And that's important.
Yeah.
Other than that, I really had thought about one specific high school teacher. who was my homeroom. Like, we called it seminar, but he didn't, like, he was a math teacher, and I probably had him for math, but, you know, in the way you asked that question, it's relevant, or I think I understand why he comes to mind. Is it really, education for me isn't just a transaction and not just like learn this and then you repeat it back. And he never felt that way to me. We talked more, it was homeroom, but we talked a lot about me and music interests, and we shared music, and he would share bands and songs with me and vice versa. And I felt that he wasn't like, oh yeah, cool, I'll check that out. He would come back and had spent time with it. And I mean, music at that time was a big deal for me and still is, but that teacher, because again, it wasn't a transaction. He was so influential because I felt in retrospect, like, he does what I think counseling really is about, is like holding space. He's not directing or telling people what to do. He believes that we had the skills to figure it out and be who we are. And I think he just gave us the space to do that and kept like goalposts. He was goofy and funny and had a great sense of humor. I think that comes in handy with working with high schoolers.
Yeah.
that particular teacher, you know, I'll just say a lot of male teachers, maybe that's another thing. Being a male, looking to males in that environment, that's typically more females. A lot of the male teachers that I had who felt maybe a little quirky, and that kind of resonated with me. I've never necessarily felt like your classic dude who likes sports and cars and
as much as your
things of that nature.
Baseball,
yeah.
Metaphors, you know, right. Come against that.
I did grow up playing sports, but yeah. I'm not playing them anymore. You know, it's just a kid thing. But the teachers who are a little maybe quirky or not afraid to like something that maybe is more girly or like artistic, or those people really resonate with me. Yeah. That teacher in specifically, and then a middle school art teacher. Those two men, I think, just showed me neat ideas of what men could look like.
Is that consciously something that you think about now, about like, you know, not that you're emulating them specifically, but something about that you try to make a part of what you do in education?
Yeah,
now?
I would not want to offend anyone who would listen to this, but it's come up in my career more than once where, I mean, honestly, in the district that I work in, when I had first started, it would come up in conversation. A student, someone at some point would say, yeah, everyone thought you were gay when you first got here. Hmm. And I'll say something like, first of all, why would that matter?
Yeah.
Second of all, like, I'm just like, why? Yeah. I don't know.
Weird thing to think about when you're thinking about it.
There was a time where it was kind of an angry male student. Angry in the sense that, like, he's a frustrated young person. He's trying to figure out his place. And
yeah.
He put that on me at one point, and I kind of did that thing of like, first of all, why would it matter? Yeah. Second of all, you seek me out and we have time together and we talk about your life. And so how about instead of making that assumption, you see me as the yin yang that you could be, in the sense that, I mean, not that it matters, but I'm straight. I have a wife and a daughter and I'm into things that make me seem outside, I guess, like I'm gay. Yeah. So why can't you have the best of both worlds, if that's how you want to put it?
Right.
But that has been brought up a lot. And when I went to grad school, if there's a class of 25 in my cohort, I was one of 4 or 5 cisgendered males in the classroom. And so, yeah, like, gender identity in my field is interesting. I'm pretty comfortable talking about all of it. I really right. don't need to worry about judgments or anything.
Yeah.
But that comes up. I feel like that's relevant to the whole, like, who you see in your environment, what they model for you.
Yeah. Being comfortable with who you are and what you're interested in.
Yeah. So I've resonated with that, and I do use it. I've leaned to it to say, like, if that's the judgment you're going to place on me, how about you make it like an eye-opening one and not putting me in a box?
Yeah.
How about you take something from that model? And it doesn't matter at the end of the day. Yeah, why doesn't it matter? You like hanging out with me. You know, I guess it matters to you, but maybe not really. So I would try and put that on them and help them explore it.
Yeah. I think about it all the time too, actually, where like, I think about, you know, the male role models I had in my life, like my dad and my brother, very quirky, kind of, you know, again, not that type of stereotypical or traditional or whatever word we want to use for masculinity.
Yeah.
And the older I get, the more, you know, proud I am of that. And the more I think about how that's fantastic that we can, you know, have and we can show off all of these different, you know, styles and flavors of what it means to be a man in the world. And it's great. I've loved to explore that as I've gotten older. You know?
Yeah, I think it's liberating.
It is.
I also take pride in modeling that for young people. I have a fine relationship with my dad, but I would not describe him as that way. I'm a little different from him in that way. Yeah. He's a little maybe more like traditional, as we're talking about.
Right.
Maybe that's why those people stand out to me.
Yeah. Is there something about counseling you, specifically kind of again at the school level, that you think is just more important than people might realize about it?
Yes. This is an area where I don't want to cast too far of a net or anything, but because it's a role that is unique, it's not a teacher, it's not an admin, it's a totally unique thing. It's not a school social worker. We all have overlap and blend, but there's a reason why there's different roles and there's age or associations, right? ASCA, the American School Counseling Association, or ISCA, the state version of that. There are associations for all of these roles that help us define who we are and what our ethics are and what we stand for and what our job should be. And there are so many things that I think people don't really understand. The history of school counseling started in the form of aligning people with careers, period. And it really had to do a lot with, like, we need people in the industrial area, like World War II times, where we were like really funneling people.
We need people to go to the shipyard, literally.
Yeah. And that's sort of where the word guidance came from. And guidance is like a very outdated word. It's not used anymore. Shouldn't be for that reason. Because school counseling in the 21st century is a lot about the three areas of academics, social emotional learning, which I'm nervous to say this day and age, and career and college readiness. And it forms like a three-circle Venn diagram. And we are to spend 80% of our day in direct service in those three areas. And that could look like, for the academic piece, organization, planning. It could look like, how do I talk to my teachers about the things that I need? You know, for the college and career readiness, I talked about our career fair. We might do college visits. I help students maybe with, like, okay, I need to find a job. Where do I look? And then we talk about, like, have you ever been on a job interview? What do you say when someone asks, why do you need this job? And give them opportunities to think through those things or plan. And then social and emotional, opinions aside, I feel that it's really necessary to provide confidential spaces for young people. They are people. It doesn't matter that they're not, quote, an adult yet. They have very dynamic, complex brains and lives.
And we all remember being 16, 17. Yeah.
Is it not the most intense period of your life for most people? Again, I just don't understand why we'd want to harm the people who want to do that. I feel the same maybe about people like police officers. Why do we do baby with the bathwater? If you need to call 911, I would hope that the person who shows up is dedicated to what they're doing and has a good attitude about it. Same with the people that work with our kids. I don't know why it has to be an us versus them. I started doing this because I care enough about people that I want to work with them. I'd feel selfish doing other things. So yeah. I think people need to understand that we're not there to harm. We're there to support a very complex situation and a very complex society through those three lenses. I think those are the things that I think are the most important about what I do and the way that I see it. Another thing that's unofficially something that I really take pride in is like supporting the teachers around me. Yeah. I don't have a magic wand, but I do think that I am good at instilling hope and hearing people out in their frustration and then like helping them remember, yeah, but I'm going to do it anyway. And here's why. I pride myself in doing that. It's not part of the job description. We're not there for the teachers. But again, in a small district, I really pride myself on kind of checking in on that level too. But they more so are on the front lines. They get pretty chewed up sometimes by the students. So another way to say it, at least in my building, I tell a lot of students, like, you might not know where to go if you have a question, if you have a fear. I'm a good place to start. Like, I can help you find what you need. That's another sort of counseling philosophy. I want them to be autonomous and me help them find their solution. I can't tell them what to do.
And that is big, though. I feel like, again, a lot of people go through their school experience not even knowing who that point person is.
Mm-hmm. Especially in high school, you go from room to room every 40 minutes. You might get lucky and get close with the teacher, maybe not so. So I like to try and at least be a place where they can start. And I've had students ask me very random questions.
I'm sure, yes.
Yeah, but I never judge them because that's how we learn.
Yeah. Being good at instilling hope is a great skill to have. We all need people like that around us, right?
Yeah. It comes from Carl Rogers, who's a counseling godfather. He talks about having unconditional...
A lot of great godfathers and grandfathers in this field.
He talks about unconditional positive regard, genuineness, and empathy, and being ultimately not judgmental. He has an extremely client-centered view. That is the theory that he birthed, client-centered. And so he was around in the 50s, and he was in Illinois, actually. I believe he lived in Wheaton for part of his life. But worked at the University of Chicago, I think. I should have looked into that, maybe.
We'll fact check that. That's what we do, yeah.
But his philosophy really resonates with me. It really resonates with the counseling program I went to. It's a big component of how we learned. But being in a non-judgmental stance and being there to definitely not make things worse, but find that hope to instill and empower people in unconditional positive regard, really believing that everyone's redeemable and their actions are redeemable and they have the tools to correct if they have the patience maybe to do it.
Right.
So yeah.
A little bit of a be curious, not judgmental, not to quote Ted Lasso on us.
Absolutely.
A little bit there.
Yeah. Very cool.
Last thing I have for you. And of course, all privacy included, obviously not naming names or specific situations, all that aside. Yeah. I'm just curious for you, and again, whether this be with a student, with a colleague, with even the career event that you're planning, just any moments from this year or recently for you that just kind of epitomize this is why I do what I do.
Yes, there's a couple things that I hold very close to my heart, and it'll probably make me emotional to talk about it deeply, but. I think the job can be stressful in the sense that like I kind of got to get through it. So it's hard sometimes to be really conscious and like soak those things up. I do try and make an effort to like pause and consider it and picture faces. And, some of the coolest things for me are when I get a phone call from a parent that says something like, I just want to thank you so much. And my initial thought might be like, what did I do? Or like, what did I say? Or, not understanding the influence that some of the things that we do and being genuine, like how powerful they are. Those moments really stick with me. There's a couple of those where I might think it was kind of a normal day or it was just like a 20-minute thing, but it really stuck with somebody and their family. And that's been moving. I've had a handful of very special situations where a student has maybe thanked me, or kind of the classic, like, if I hadn't talked with you about that, I don't know when I would have. And in at least one instance, that has led to someone going to the hospital to take better care of themselves. And they came back and shared that with me. And it's overwhelming. I there's a really nice TED Talk that I could give a small commercial for. I forget the guy's name. He's large, both very tall and a little rounder, and he wears a top hat, and he gives a TED Talk, and it's about the lollipop moments. And he tells a story about how he's on a college campus and he's handing out lollipops for a fundraiser, and he handed out a lollipop to a young undergraduate boy and girl who were there with their parents visiting the campus, and he made a joke, and he tells a story that 4 years later he was leaving the university and someone came to his office and said goodbye and said, you never met me, but you did this for me when I was here on a tour with my family. It made me feel like I was at home. And the person who you made that joke about me with, our wedding is next year. And he uses this story to say it's not the like It's not the damage that we're afraid of doing to people. It's like we're afraid of being so influential in someone's life. Like we're afraid of being positively powerful. So he talks about these lollipop moments, the things that you do that roll off your back, but that are immensely powerful for the people that you're doing it for. I'm sure there's a lot of moments like that that I'm never going to get to hear about. But I don't know. That's okay. There's a couple that stick with me. Also, teenagers aren't the type to sit down and be like, I'd really like to share with you just how powerful that was for me. So I'd be like,
what's going on? Are you okay?
Yeah. Yeah. I'd be like, what class are you supposed to be in right now?
But yeah. Yeah. It's a real kind of, again, it's a real kind of a great power comes great responsibility thing that I don't know how aware, you know, teachers are all the time of it. It might be a little bit overwhelming if you were constantly thinking about the impact that you could have.
Mm-hmm.
But it is true that you do not know what you're going to say to someone that's going to stick with them forever.
A professor, I went to NIU. I'll put that out there. A professor at NIU said it's sacred to work with kids. Sacred. That's a powerful word to use to describe it. He was talking about how vulnerable a child is and how much damage can be done if we're not doing what we're supposed to be doing with ethics and genuineness. And so, I really try to keep the burnout at bay for that reason. And you're right. Teachers sometimes are overwhelmed by it. Sometimes they don't want that responsibility. They're humans too.
Yeah.
Again, that's why I think we should respect teachers and care for them, because they're working with your kids and we want people doing that to feel good about it. I don't see how that's not helpful for everyone at the end of the day. So.
All right, Chris. Well, that was all I had for you.
Okay.
Thank you so much for making the time to come out here today and to have this conversation. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. It's nice to talk.
That was my conversation with Chris Marofsa. He's a school counselor at Hiawatha High School. Thank you so much for listening to the show. As always, feel free to nominate a teacher in your life to be on the show. It's how we get all of our great guests like Chris. You can send them our way to teachersLounge@niu.edu. And please continue to send your story ideas so we can keep bringing you the best education coverage possible. Wherever you're hearing the podcast, please subscribe, leave us a rating, or share if you like what we do. It's the best way to get even more perspectives here on the show. You can also subscribe to our Teachers Lounge newsletter over at WNIJ.org. A big thank you to the Northern Illinois band Kind Ofs for the music you hear each and every episode of the show. I've been your host, Peter Mudlin, and we'll be back with even more Teachers Lounge very soon. See ya.